You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hail Cheaters. Welcome to a very special, slightly shorter version of the Always Cheating Podcast. I'd say more than slightly shorter. I'd say this is a much shorter version of the Always Cheating Podcast. Brendan, it's a little travelogue check-in for you. It's Sunday evening here in the UK. We just got back from the train from the Chelsea-Man City match. Easily the best match I've ever seen in person, I would say. Possibly just the best game, like, you know, including baseball and basketball and everything else. Just a great game. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
Great, Josh. Yeah, coming off of that high at Stamford Bridge, and attributing to that high was our friend James, who was serving hospitality. We couldn't have done it without you, James. We'll host you at an MLS match sometime soon. So yeah, it was all timed kind of perfectly that we ended the trip with Chelsea Man City. Yesterday, we went to Selhurst Park to see Crystal Palace host Everton. An equally competitive match, a little sour for the home team, and just kind of a different spectacle. When we were watching Palace Everton, Josh and I, we were saying, there's no doubt that the match we're going to see tomorrow, there's going to be a little bit more skill on show. And I guess that's a testament to just the team sheets that you put out. There were Eze may be the best player that we saw this weekend, all things considered. And then the literal pyrotechnics at London Stadium on Thursday night. I don't know which was hotter. The fire that they shot off in the lead up to kickoff at London Stadium, or the fruity language that we heard from the people in the stands. What's hotter for you, the language or the fire?
I think it's got to be the language, Brandon. I'll never get the guy yelling at the lino. Like, the match was over, and I think this guy was like, I didn't quite get my screams in during the match itself. And so he got out of his system, and I'm glad that he was able to do that. I feel like the world was better for him getting out of his system at the end of that match. So we saw three matches in 4 days. We also had a meetup on Friday evening, and I don't really want to shout out every single person that we met at the meetup, because I'm worried that if I do that, it's just boring to list 45 people. But also, I don't want to leave anybody out. So, special shout out, especially to all the various producer patrons that showed up there, right? Bob Fox and Jeff Turner, and there were a couple
of
Francis Moore, as well as who's our American friend, Blair Jacobson as well. So a lot of producers showed up as well, and Mark and Az showed up, and Tom and Nima, just a lot of people that that are sort of stalwarts in the fantasy community. It was very cool to see them, and as well as meet a lot of people who our friends from Leeds came down. That was very exciting. Yep. And we had a very good time just sort of chatting with everybody. And I'm glad that we put out the call once again that said, if you don't know a single person, you should still come out to this meetup, because that ended up happening. We had a lot of people who were just sort of anxiously walking in the door, like, what am I walking into right now? And I think that it seemed, from my perspective anyway, like those people were all made to feel very welcome. And so it was a really, really fun meetup. And this trip in general has just been a real sort of 10 out of 10 trip for us. The flight was cheerful. It was upbeat flight. It's kind of contrasting it with the flight that you and I took to Vegas last year, where that was a grim slog, that flight. And this one left even later than the Vegas flight. I felt like everyone was in a great mood heading off to London. And so I went from there. And we did the FPL TV show as well. That was a really fun experience. So thanks to Ian for being a great host, making us look not especially dumb. I was very happy about that. You and I both have our like cringe moments from that show.
Yeah, there are some cringe moments that we put live on broadcast. Yeah, but Ian Irving did his best to iron those out. And I have to thank Tom Fitzgerald, who set us up with the show, an amazing producer. He's got a great team over there. But yeah, you kicked things off when Ian tossed it to you. You explained how you would be scouting players live in person using a, quote, pirate's monocle. And then you proceeded to mime what a little telescope might look like. And Ian kind of gave you this look of like, I don't know what you're talking about. Let's move on. And then I did what I have basically been doing for the last 6 months or so, is calling Cole Palmer Ollie Palmer, because Welcome to Wrexham is just kind of embedded in my brain now. To my credit, Ollie Palmer also scored this weekend. But I'm continuing my streak, Josh. This is two of our last three trips to the UK. I'm now actually witnessing fantasy returns live in person.
That's true.
When Nico Jackson scored that third goal for Chelsea, I thought Cole Palmer scored it, and I leaped out of my seat, and I started screaming with all of the other surrounding Chelsea fans. And then I realized it was Nico Jackson, and I thought, well, at least this helps my cover as a Fulham supporter in the Chelsea stand.
My punt on the match as well. They went around with bet sheets as we were waiting for the match to start, and you and I – actually, I thought I put down all these bets, and then you were like, oh, I'm just going to root for your bets. I was like, wait, I thought we were both going into this together.
Well, yeah, I sometimes you're cheaper than me, and other times I'm cheaper than you. And when it comes to sports gambling, it's my turn to be cheap. Yeah, we had a lot of interesting sort of encounters with, you know, if you do the hospitality route, that's the easiest, which is one of the reasons why we do hospitality, is it's a very straightforward way to just buy tickets to a match day online without having to join the club or whatever. Fully engaged with and a fan of just how tribalistic the Football Association is, and that's kind of what makes the spectacle what it is. But we know the ground rules, Josh. Like, we can't just show up and fly our fantasy colors in a home stand or even an away stand. You've got to be respectful.
We saw this with the Everton supporter on Saturday, right?
Right. So in front of us at the Palace match was a group of five guys, and a couple of them seemed to be out and out Palace fans, but one of them, who was on crutches with a broken leg, when he got to his seat, pulled out his Everton cap and was wearing it in full sight of the like non-executive box Crystal Palace fans, and they all kind of gave him a side eye. When he then stood up to celebrate, I think it was the Decore goal, the second goal that went in, one of the Palace fans came over and had some very choice words for him.
He gave him the eye. Exactly.
And then when Palace scored the equalizer, that same Palace fan really got in these guys' faces, and it was a whole situation. I do put most of the blame on the friends who brought their guy with one leg to this match, and they probably could have just given him a clue of, like, just don't wear your Everton hat, and also don't stand up and wildly cheer the Everton goal.
They were in the complete polar opposite of the supporter, the visiting supporter section. So I feel like, yeah, so fantasy-wise, we had a good fantasy experience. We were both on green arrows. You did even better than me. I benched Tsimikas, and it looked like it was going to be okay because Brentford got chance after chance after chance, but in the end, they kept a clean sheet, and he got two assists. So I benched a 15-pointer for Van Heck, who, of course, I mean, Brighton cannot keep a clean sheet to anybody. And also, I know they're down a few players, but a 1-1 draw at home to Sheffield is a terrible result. I feel like we're really not getting the full Deserby ball that we were getting early on in the season. So I feel like, though, Brandon, we can talk fantasy. This is an international break. It just kicked off. We can talk fantasy. We can talk about Game Week 13 on our Sunday pod next week. But I thought we could just quickly do a little travelogue here. So let's you know, we'll just go in order of our trip, okay? So we get in Thursday. We go to the London Stadium, which is an interesting experience because we just bought those tickets. For people asking, sometimes you have to do the hospitality, sometimes you have a friend who can get you tickets. We've kind of done it every way. And then for Europa League matches, we were joking that they were just going to wait until we got there for the match to start. They were just, you know, they're very happy to sell me tickets right from the website. But we ended up getting there. It was a packed stadium. We kept up our footy scran, terrible food. We had this, it was like uncooked bacon on top of the, I knew I shouldn't have got a head and a hat, right? I should not get a bacon cheeseburger there. Just get a simple one patty cheeseburger. I went deluxe and it was pretty gross, but they did have gin and tonic on tap. So I enjoyed that. So pre-match, enjoyed it. Crowd was good. Stadium was completely full when we got there. I like the London Stadium. I feel like don't love the track. I don't think anybody does, right? And I know that even West Ham Sports still kind of miss Upton Park. But I think the stadium itself, I thought, was quite nice. And the area around it was nice. I mean, we got there in the evening, so we didn't get a really good chance to walk around with it too much. But it seemed like a nice place to go see a match.
Yeah, padded seating, which is nice for my little butt cheeks. And what I also enjoyed was as we walked to our seats, like 15 minutes before kickoff, there was a DJ who was just doing DJ stuff, and he was up on the big screen. It felt like I was walking.
Like Fatboy Slim, I think.
I don't know if Fatboy Slim is like a Brighton supporter. I don't know if that tracks.
Were they playing that Right Here, Right Now song? Isn't that Fatboy Slim?
Right Here.
Maybe. My idea with the DJ was the goal that decided that match that Paqueta scored went into a long, drawn-out, minutes-long VAR review, and I thought this was the perfect opportunity for them to bring the DJ back out. And this could make VAR like so much more palatable for the fans in the stadium. And we'd already witnessed this with Arsenal-West Ham back in winter 2020. We sat through a long, drawn-out Lacazette VAR review. And it is true what they say. When you're watching at home on TV, at least you're seeing replays and you have an understanding of what they're looking at. At this West Ham match, the Paqueta goal went in and we were just like, now we have no idea what's going on for the next few minutes.
Yeah, it's like seeing it in person. We had a few VAR reviews over the time. Every match we went to had some VAR in it. And there's just something kind of, and I don't want to get into this too much, but because in general, the match experience was great for all three. But something like kind of paternalistic about it, right? Like, oh, the fans can't handle being shown what's on these highlights. Like people are going to riot and run into the, you know, field or something like that. But just sitting there watching these VR reviews, it's really not a great experience. I mean, at the very least they could show highlights from goals or moments earlier in the match or something. But instead you just sit there and just says VAR checking and, you know, people, you can't drink in stadiums here. So you're just sitting there just literally just staring straight ahead at nothing for, you know, 3 or 4 minutes. It's the craziest experience.
But the that Europa League match was a great preview of what was to come from West Ham this weekend. We saw Ward-Prowse have an assist on that Paqueta goal. And Andy Sinaldo on the FPL show was actually giving me stick for having JWP in my fantasy squad.
What did he say? He said he's a good player and I like him a lot, but I wouldn't have him.
So, Andy, I hope you're listening right now. It's amazing sharing the fantasy show screen with you, but this one's on you, buddy. I'm happy with my 11 points. will I ever get them again? I frankly don't know. But weirdly, my big takeaway from that match was Aguard in the center back position had a great game. But our seats there were quite nice because we were in the ninth row. Even though you had the track between you and the pitch, I thought we had a good bird's eye view of just the incredible touch that so many of these players have, especially when they're working the ball through the midfield. Any other players stand out to you?
Yeah, I mean, Jared Bowen, I thought, was maybe the best. I think I agree. I mean, Edgar was great. Paqueta had some nice moments, but I think Bowen, just the way he was, he was kind of doing, you know, he's playing somewhat out of position in the forward role, right? And as the lone forward anyway. And, but he was just harassing the keeper all the time. He was sort of, you know, on the last defender. Just his quality was really evident. And it's one of the reasons why it's really fun to go see matches in person, because you just like, you get a sense of the physicality. You get a sense of how hard it is to, you know, pass out of a trap, right? Like, just like if you're surrounded by a couple of defenders, when you kind of are like at the angle of the players a little more, you're like, how does anybody ever score? How does anybody ever pass and like complete a pass? Like, it all seems so much harder in person. And I think that's, it's, there's something about the like 10,000 foot remove of watching everything on TV where you just don't get a sense always of the difficulty of it, right? And it's just like, I think the longer, you know, it'd been almost 3.5 years. And so I think I really got kind of reinvigorated watching it in person and like, right, this is really hard. This is really hard to do, all this stuff. And so sort of gives you a perspective sometimes when you're at home and you're like, ah, what, this is a crap match. These players are all crap. You know, nobody. And so the West Ham match was, I guess it was, you know, it was the worst match of the three, but it was still fun just to go to the London Stadium and get back.
Shout out to the Olympiacos fans, which were going nuts the entire time. So even with the fruity language from the West Ham fans, they kind of needed to do that to compete with how crazy the Olympiacos fans were. Okay, so then that moves us on to the Crystal Palace Everton match. You want to give your initial you had feelings about the ground itself and that.
Well, Selhurst Park was awesome. I think it didn't. I guess because we'd gone, I think the area around the London Stadium is a little more built up, so you have a little more. It's a very different kind of experience walking to Selhurst Park. It's sort of, you just don't really get, you don't get this in America, right? You don't get like, you're sort of walking down a row of houses and suddenly there's a giant stadium just like around the corner. And so we did have a fun experience. We walked up and we had bought these hospitality tickets for the 2010 club or whatever. And there's a bunch
not
of
Speronis, unfortunately.
Not Speronis, sadly. Although I think we made the right decision in the end. But there was a couple guards there and I was like, cause we're there a couple hours later. I was like, oh, where's the 2010 club at? And he says, club's closed, mate. he said it with full confidence, where I started leaking confidence myself. I was like, I'm pretty sure we can go get in here.
I'm used to hanging out with you where you, once you make up your mind, you won't stop. You're like a dog with a bone. Like, I remember trying to get into some bar in New York City with you like 15 years ago and you didn't have ID and you just had this look of like, I don't care what this doorman says, I'm getting in. So it was weird to see you with these information officers by Selhurst Park, and you were just like, wow.
We did get in.
Well, obviously because we had the tickets, but I don't think they get too many questions from some Americans in barber jackets looking for the 2010 club.
Every time we told anyone we had hospitality, I was trying to mutter, we have a hospitality.
But that match, of course, within a minute thereabouts, was a goal from Mykolenko. And so my Gehi clean sheet that I was all excited to sort of sweat for 90 minutes live in person, that was taken away from me. Yeah. But what was abundantly clear at the same time was Fabrizio Eze back in the starting 11 for Palace. He was just so good, like streets beyond any other player on the pitch, certainly for the first half. And then I think, Josh, we saw him sort of be a little too excited to be back in the squad and was putting in some rash challenges. And there was a moment there where we're like, they might need to take Eze off because he'll get a second yellow here.
Yeah, trying to make up for lost time a little bit. I thought that was a fun match, though. It was an interesting experience. I mean, obviously, I thought the Palace supporters handled the loss well. You know, it was a real back and forth game, and it looked like it was going to end in a draw. And then ultimately, Everton pulled it out. I thought the Everton supporters were really impressive. It was a really vocal group of supporters, and I think as far as like takeaways, I think hospitality. If anyone's curious, I think it was the second half was better than the whole reason to do it in some ways. You and I were talking about this coming back from the Chelsea match today. One of the reasons to do it is it just takes a lot of decisions out of your hands, right? Where are we going to go watch the games before the match? Where are we going to eat? Where are we going to go afterwards? How are we going to avoid the lines, right? And so you sort of do all that, and it kind of almost pays for itself because you end up getting all these meals and drinks and stuff you pay for. If you're in, it maybe just depends on how much you drink. You and I were both in the mood to really go for it. So we're drinking Eagle Estates wine right now as we record this pod. They gave us, by the end, it was like, I don't know why we morphed into like their favorite customers and they just kept bringing stuff to us. It was very nice. We ended on a real high note with the Palace hospitality.
There was a woman in the 2010 club at the end who gave us the two bottles of Eagle Rosé, and she came over with another bottle of wine, and she was filling up our wine glasses like all the way to the top, like it was a pint glass in this, like, we couldn't tell if she was being gracious or threatening.
Well, she said, I don't know what I'm going to do with this bottle if I don't fill it
up. So we can't spend this whole time talking about hospitality, but I will say, Decore got his usual sort of like garbage goal, sweeping up whatever is in the box. We were kind of ribbing on Decore earlier in the match, being like, well, How is Everton's system working without a you know, kind of a more traditional number 10 that Decore is like a total workhorse and he'll run and run and run. And he's a very, very good finisher, but where's the creativity? And Everton just had it in him that day. And I don't know, would you fault Crystal Palace at all in that loss? Because I think it might be the first home loss that we've seen in our travels.
Yeah, is it the first home loss that we've seen? That's interesting. Yeah, it might be. I don't think you can fault them. It was sort of, it felt like they were on top, really. I mean, it felt like Everton basically successfully pulled off a counterattacking strategy. I think maybe all three of their goals were, well, the first goal they scored was they just blitzed Palace and scored, you know, kind of instantly, as you mentioned. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I thought they were ahead really in that match, but you know, credit to Everton, it's a great road win. They really completely turned around under Dyche. I mean, I sort of, you know, if we can bring this back briefly at least to fantasy, I still have this idea in my head that you want to sort of have defenders when they play Everton. You want to sort of, maybe there's a more captainable fixtures, all that stuff. And they are definitely more of a menace than they were at the start of the season. I think this is one of the things you really got to do in fantasy is keep shifting your point of view, right? I think Forest is another club like this where when you watch Forest play, you've got to, like, they're pretty good, right? Like, Forest can play, they can score. And, you know, we were watching the West Ham matches. We got the real, the English experience, the oft complained about English TV experience, where there were four great matches on this morning. And actually, in the end, I mean, the West Ham Forest actually was a good match. But fantasy wise, it was kind of the only one that didn't really, really matter, right? I mean, you did have James Ward-Prowse.
Yeah, I did. Thanks for bringing that up again. He scored 11 points. And I also had Thomas Suchek on my bench. So a once proud West Ham is proud again in my fantasy team.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
So that's Palace Everton, which brings us to today. That we actually did coordinate leaving Selhurst Park with enough time to get back to close to our Airbnb to watch the second half of Bournemouth Newcastle, and we were like, wow, this is great. You know, it's still scoreless once we walked into the bar across from our the Bridge Tap here on Borough High Street. And like, you put your stuff down to go to the bathroom the moment you did that. What's his face? Solanke scores, and it's sort of like, that feeling of every time you're just like, all right, now I'm here to engage with my clean sheet, and the that's always the moment that. I'm trying to think of things that as soon as you acknowledge their existence, they disappear.
It's like when you're having a fun time with your friends and you're like, this is a really fun time. It's like someone's immediately going to like leave or something. Yeah, exactly. You can't ever acknowledge when things are going well. That's a good rule of thumb. But I think, so it brings us to Sunday. First of all, we went to Borough Market in the morning. We made a decision to just kind of try a different neighborhood this trip. And the London Bridge area, which is where Borough Market is found, is absolutely amazing. And I don't know why people don't talk even more about Borough Market as like one of the, maybe people do and I just don't realize it, but as one of like the places you must visit when you're here, because you and I have been there several times on this trip already. And again, every time we were there, we had great food and there's places to drink and eat. And so, yeah, if you're just visiting London sometime, it's an absolute must visit. And of course, people who live here already know that. So we went to Borough Market in the morning. I had some awesome like fresh pasta, this little pasta station. And we headed over to the Chelsea-Man City match, which was kind of immediately great, right? Again, good experience getting there. Good club shop, two floors. Loved the club shop. Almost too many options. I was overwhelmed by the number of options, but I did get my seven-year-old a couple of items. I'm sort of toying with the idea of making them a Chelsea fan, and I could sort of double my odds, right? You get a little Chelsea, a little Arsenal. Maybe we can get a title out of it. So we'll see. Maybe we can get a title or Champions League. We'll see. I'll take one or either one. But I do like the. I mean, obviously, if you grow up, I think when you live in America, this is a little side tangent for one second here, Brandon. When you live in America, you are required to support the club that your parents support. That's, you know, you and I are both Michigan State fans. All the Detroit sports for me. I've been in New York for like 18 years now, and I still refuse to root for any New York teams. Like I can kind of align with the Mets a little bit, right? But I'm still not a full on. And Yankees are just—it's unacceptable, right? I wouldn't even buy merch. Like I just no way, never. I think when you're picking a Premier League club, because it's across the pond, it's a little more acceptable to like give your kid a different club, right? And sort of diversify a little bit. So, so we go to the match and just kind of immediately we were in the Clark area of the stadium, and the sight lines are incredible. The pitch was beautiful. Everyone was so keyed up. It was just an incredible atmosphere. I mean, you were saying it was like we were watching on, you know, obviously it was in person, but it had the kind of like close up feel of watching a match on TV. Just something about the way the stadium is shaped and the, you know, just the way it's kind of set up.
Yeah, I was referencing the sort of the way the pitch was tilted from our seats from that the Clark Suite, and we had the closer view of the broadcast tilt, and it was perfect. And this is our second time being at Stamford Bridge, and for me, and Selhurst Park is renowned for its home support and its enthusiasm and the noise that it generates. And we did experience that at Selhurst Park, and it was great. When we mentioned the home fans were in good voice, but there's something about Stamford Bridge that it is the best stadium I think we've been to as far as generating noise. And
Old Trafford for the Manchester Derby was pretty lit too. That place was actually shaking when McTominay scored that second goal.
Yes, it's true. I still would rate Stamford Bridge highest in terms of noise generation, and I would give some credit to the City fans for singing throughout the match, and there was some good banter between the two sets of support where City would be singing, you know, we're champions of Europe, and then the Chelsea supporters would say, well, we've won it twice, so, you know, who are you, and so on. The vibes were just so good, and the way that the teams traded blows just lent to that. And I think the Chelsea support handled the rocking. I mean, the season that Chelsea has had this far, you think if they go up, you are filled with hope, and then you start seeing City claw back, that they would just lose faith. But you could feel the support at the Bridge like never wavered. And the way Chelsea played, they deserved that level of support because they just played so well, the best we've seen Chelsea so far this season. And I don't think that was because Man City was off their game. I mean, for God's sakes, Man City scored four goals. So it was just, you couldn't ask for a better match where it was just two teams playing really well and just trying to trade blows.
Yeah, I think there's something special about that 4-4 scoreline, right? It reminds me of the famous Arsenal Newcastle 4-4 from 2011 or whatever it was, and just, you know, 4-4 just says classic, right? It sort of screams classic, and just the way it was back and forth. I mean, I think no team was ever more than one goal ahead, right? It was, 1-0, 1-1, 2-1, 2-2, 3-2, 3-3, 4. You know, just the entire time, it was completely back and forth. and forth, just exactly what you want in a match. And I think, you know, as far as, you know, player performance in Holland, it was great to see him in person. We saw, you know, he scored a brace, got the I don't know, it felt like a dodgy pen, but I haven't watched all the replays. You know, in real life, it's, it, you know, looks a little different. But yeah, I thought that Bernardo Silva was amazing. I just kept going on about him because he's just like such a brilliant player to watch. And Raheem Sterling was the one that you and I were sort of bad mouthing him the first like 20 minutes of the game, and then he scored a goal. And he's like he does so many things so well, and then he does these other things that just drive you insane. And I think unfortunately, it's the stuff that drives you insane is just so obvious sometimes that it's kind of hard not to focus on it a little bit. But he obviously had a very strong match in the end, and I thought that, you know, Palmer was good. Alvarez was, Alvarez and Foden were both fine, I'd say. They were, you know, but I Doku, the kind of man of the hour FPL wise, had a big chance actually, and then gets the yellow for diving, gets taken off at the 59th minute. Just classic fantasy. We're like the most bought player from a team, just gets 0 points that week. Defensively, I thought Kyle Walker was, I thought he had some moments. It was fun to see him in person, you know, just because like he's so physical. He's much bigger in real life. I was really like taken by how like physically imposing he looks, you know, in person. And but ultimately he kind of was at fault for the Sterling goal. And the defense on both sides can't really shine, right, when you've conceded four on both sides. Although James get an assist, that was nice.
Yeah, certainly returns from a lot of defenders, Akanji, Thiago Silva, and so on. But yeah, there were weak moments from like the Diaz challenge on Broja for the final pen that was given, then Palmer scored. Was just the conditions, I think, were suitable to slide tackling. There was in the second half when the rain started, it was slide tackling everywhere, and I felt like this is just old school English football with like rain pouring down and everyone just slide tackling everywhere.
There's something so beautiful about it. Just like evening match, final match of the game week, right? Going to international break. It's like, this is it, right? This is it for 2 weeks. And just the pouring rain night match, really exciting. Crowd was into it. It's just about as good of a like sport match going experience as you can have, right? It was just such a great, I don't mean to go on about it, but it was just like, it was such a great match, such a great experience.
We had it and you didn't, and you'll never have it. But I wanted to also mention Conor Gallagher, who he had two assists himself, but I think he stood out beyond Enzo and I'm going to blank on his name, the Ecuadorian, Caicedo. I don't know that they influenced the match as much as they would have liked, whereas Conor Gallagher, I think, played really well. So it's a performance that Chelsea supporters will take a lot of, they'll take a lot of hope from. It's interesting how Chelsea against Spurs win 4-1, and the narrative is, well, Spurs supporters will weirdly be happy with that, and Chelsea didn't play very well. But then there is this match where it's a draw against the league champions, and Chelsea should be just really proud and excited about what's to come, because maybe this means that things are finally starting to click.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Spurs lose 2-1 at Wolves. Draw would have been a totally acceptable return there, but I think to lose 2-1 suddenly, like, I think people are getting like a little more worried about Ange Ball and whether it's just defensively solid enough. But I suppose they were down, what, like a billion players. That was kind of like the narrative for this weekend, right? You had Spurs, Arsenal, Newcastle. Generally, this is like the worst. The third international break is like the worst one, right? I mean, like we're really getting into it now. So we got to stop for two more weeks. But I think several clubs feel like they are just decimated at the moment. And it's affecting fantasy as well, clearly. I mean, does Newcastle even lose that match to Bournemouth, right? Credit to Bournemouth, but, you know, just Newcastle was down. They were like a championship squad yesterday, right, in terms of how many players they were down. So and Arsenal too, I mean, they pulled out the 3-1 win, and, you know, I think we're in a really fun spot as far as I think I said this on a pod a while ago, but you should be paying attention to the table now, right? It's like this is when it's fun to pay attention to the table. Like we all know that it's very likely that Man City is gonna win the title this year, but we're 12 weeks in and Man City is 1 point ahead of Liverpool and Arsenal. You've got Spurs just a little further back as well, and so we have like a genuine proper title race, and like, let's enjoy it now. So one of these clubs will probably fall off. Hopefully Liverpool and Arsenal can hold on, you know, at least until You know, late spring, but it does feel like, I mean, Man City just conceding four goals. I don't remember that being like part of the Man City. Like, that just feels like a lot of goals for Man City to concede. And so it makes me wonder if maybe there is something about this team that isn't quite, I don't know, like maybe like quite as like solid, like through and through. I mean, Kyle Walker's getting older. I don't know if that's a factor or not. I mean, he's actually played pretty well, I think, so far this season, but it's doesn't feel like maybe they're just like, maybe it's, you know, it's losing Kevin De Bruyne. Maybe they just don't control matches quite as well as they did in past seasons. So, you know, it could be that when KDB's back in January, wherever it is, that changes things a little bit.
I have a thought. Maybe it's because it's total and complete nonstop chaos in the league so far this season, and which is exciting as you watch these matches. You really just don't know what to expect. But as a fantasy manager, it's absolutely dread-inducing because it's been very hard to get a toehold. I hope that the scores in game week 12, I think, give people some more positivity after the anemic game week 11, and we head into the international break. So yes, it's been a great trip. If you want to check us out on the fantasy show from Premier League Productions, we posted a link to our YouTube. We'll do it again on our Twitter post when we post this episode. And find it elsewhere in our Twitter feed, etc. Give it a watch. I understand it's also available on Peacock, and we got a note from our friend Andy, who was watching it all the way in Nigeria live as it happened. He sent us a great screenshot of you doing your pirate monocle pantomime, which is so funny. So thanks again to the Premier League for having us on that. Just as we look ahead to the break, I don't think we really talked about the moves that we made this weekend. Josh, you rolled your transfer. I went for Martinelli. I moved Odegaard to Martinelli, which didn't work.
That's a meetup induced, you know, crazy transfer.
I was definitely convinced by a few Arsenal fans, but you know, it seemed like there were there was some upside there. And home Burnley, you've got to basically cast some chips out on that fixture anytime you have the opportunity to do so. So I suddenly, is Martinelli a problem that I have to solve during the break? I'm not sure. But now that West Ham has a new lease on life, suddenly maybe I don't have to worry about them and I can focus on Martinelli. You rolled your transfer, Josh. How are you feeling about your team as we head into the break and based on what you saw this weekend?
Well, it's hard to get over benching Tsimikas, and that was 13 points lost. It's probably the difference between, I don't know. I'm trying not to get too caught up in it. It cost me several hundred thousand spots, unfortunately. But, you know, if one player can make that much of a difference, that means I can still make up that kind of ground, right? So I'm feeling okay. I mean, I'm up about like 1.4 million between international breaks from second to third. So I feel good about that. Up maybe 300,000 to 400,000 spots this game week. So, you know, it's we move on, as they say. And you and I are flying back to New York tomorrow. So this is it for us. This is goodbye. Thank you to everyone who came to the meetup on Friday. Again, I just don't want to start listing off every single person we met because I don't want to miss anybody. But thank you so much, everyone who came. And if you want to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. Thank you to all our Patreon supporters, especially the ones who were able to make it on Friday. We'll be back on Sunday a week from now with our game week 13 preview. So hopefully we'll have some international break news on Martinelli, etc. That's it. Brandon, do you want to thank our producer patrons?
Yeah, we're on the road, but we do. We're contractually obligated to thank these fine folks, and we thank them we will. From Mike DiPietro to Trevor Ingerson and our buddy Chris Howell, Bob Bascoon, James Holland, Dave Wagner, Lodal, Nick Wright, Lazaros Yanos, Jesse Halstead, Bruce Kerr, Brian Chin, Blair Jacobson. Great to see you, Blair. Todd Byerly, Andy Portlock at FPL Merch, Kerry Swanson, Jefferson Turner. Love the Silly Goose jumper. Buffalo Wild Wings, Francis Moore. Francis Moore was, I think, what could I say about him? Chatting with him was sobering and good. He was a smart guy. Sam Schauer, Caleb Robbie, Velger, Paulson Kruger, Alex Holcomb, James Keatley, The Saint, Bob Fox. Bob Fox had some very nice things to say to us at the meetup. It was a genuine pleasure to meet you, Bob. Craig Jackson, Shalin F. Kadakia, Terrence O'Donnell, Heath Cram, Thomas Tislov, Noah Louise, Travis Grant, Linus Venerstrom, Dan Parsons, James C., Matthew Skinner, Fred Jacobson, Brennan, Daniel Hart, Lolly, and Ben Coombs. Rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your pods. We'll be back next week with a proper Game Week 12 preview and whatever information we pick up from matches happening this international break. Any last words, Josh?
Nope. Just thanks again to everyone who showed up on Friday. Really appreciate it. And everyone was so nice. It was just a really great opportunity to meet everybody. And I think we could have asked for a better match experience. So congrats to West Ham, Everton, and Chelsea/Man City. Does that feel like a win for Man City? They got a point out of it, right? So congrats to the supporters of all those clubs. And we'll be back next week with our Game Week 13 preview pod. Thanks again. Bye.